Welcome to the Echo Community Church Podcast. At Echo, we're all about being and making disciples of Jesus Christ. And on this podcast, you'll hear solid teaching from the Bible from our pastors at Echo. Thanks for checking us out and enjoy the message.
Good morning, everybody. Maybe we can bond together, relate to one another. Here's something I know that's true of all of us. You ready? Each of us was born at a very young age. It was really dark, and then it was really bright. And that's probably where the similarities end, right? Who raised you? Who raised you? Grandmother? Okay. Mom? Okay, mom and dad. Stepmom? Okay. Auntie? Changes, doesn't it? Maybe some of you it changed. It was mom for a while and then grandma. Maybe some of you it was mom and dad and then mom and stepdad and stepmom and dad. I was raised by dad and mom. At some point, we all started learning about ourselves. I wonder how old you were when you figured out I act a little bit differently when mom's around than when she isn't. Or when whoever raised me is present in the room compared to when they're not. I started recognizing that when I wanted to break rules, it was easier when dad and mom were not present. In fact, I was even more brave to break the rules. In fact, I even thought there was wisdom. If I want to break a rule, it's more wise for me to break it when they can't see me breaking it. It's good. Yeah, right? We had rules, unreasonable rules, like not eating too many cookies. And we literally had a cookie jar. It was shaped like the little old woman who lived in the shoe. We had a ceramic cookie jar. And when my mom would make homemade cookies, she'd fill that thing up, and she filled it up. Not only did she get cookies in the jar, she even got them the whole way down into the insole and the toes of the boot. And I remember my sister and I, when we wanted to have cookies at non-cookie time, we dared not do it when mom was in the room. That was foolish. We had an elaborate system. One was the lookout. We lived in a trailer, so you couldn't get too far, and you had to do this quick. But when we wanted to break the rules, we made sure that we conspired together. My mom's listening to this, likely, and so now there's probably, you know, I'm almost 50, and I'm confessing these things. Sorry, Mom and Dad. You probably already knew. But, you know, we figured out a way to break the rules while they weren't in the room. If you had siblings, and there was ways you wanted to talk to them that broke the rules, you dare not do it while mom and dad were there. You did it when they weren't there. You just learned, I act differently when dad and mom are around compared to when they're not. In school, did you act differently when the teacher was in the room or when they were gone? You acted differently, didn't you? What about a substitute? Do you drive differently when there's a police officer in the car behind you compared to when they're not? You should. I know some of you are thinking, you know, I'm just waiting for the cop to pull me over and tell me what a great job I'm doing out here. Just to pull me over and say, you know what, that was a dynamic lane change back there. Turn signals were great. Here's a certificate, right? You take it to Dunkin' Donuts, get a free dozen on us, you know, whatever. I don't know how old you were, but I learned I behave differently when the person in charge is with me compared to when they're not. I generally obeyed the rules when my parents were around or the teacher was around or the coach was present or the Royal Ranger leader was there compared to when they weren't. I also found in other ways I was different. I felt less afraid, especially when I was younger. I was less afraid of thunderstorms when my parents were home than when they weren't. I was less afraid of camping when Commander Rich and Commander George, because those are my two commanders growing up, when they were in the tent and it was raining, I felt safe. When they weren't, I'll be honest, I felt a little nervous. Because I'm like, I don't know why I felt like if there's a flood, they'll know what to do. Just what I thought. When the coach was watching, I played differently than if the coach wasn't watching. Just kind of part of what I learned about myself and that I behave in different ways. And it's all the people who raised us. You know the other thing? None of them were perfect. None of us were raised by perfect people. And we could probably give you an opportunity to go around the room and compare who had it worse. Some of you would win, right? You had it worse than others. But my parents weren't perfect, and now as a parent, I'm not perfect. And I'm starting to recognize that it's very likely My boys behave differently when I can see them and when I'm present than if I'm not. Now, I'm not entirely sure because I'm not there when I'm not there. And there's this weird thing I'm doing as a parent. You know what I'm trying to? I'm trying to get them to live the way they should live if I'm present in my absence. I'm trying to get them to say, I want you to live with as much wisdom and restraint and obedience if I'm not with you than if I'm with you. I want you to be as brave when you speak to an adult or when you have to ask a clarifying question or if you don't understand what's going on in the classroom. I want you to be as confident in asking your teacher a question when I'm not there as if I was there to ask it for you. It's almost like we're preparing them to live a life in our presence, in our absence. And it's the reverse as a believer. Because here's what I also know. You and I live differently when we know God's with us. When we know God's watching. You know that creepy Sting song? Yeah. Everywhere you go, everything you do, I'll be watching you. Someone's like, oh, it's so pretty. I'm like, that's creepy. That's what a stalker says. And depending on what your idea of God is, this is either a message of comfort or one of discomfort. Because some of you imagine God like the police officer sitting in the median with the radar gun, trying to ruin your day when you're just trying to make good time. And you think he or she should be doing something much more important than asking you to pay a fine for going too fast over the speed limit. And you resent as soon as you see them, like, oh, why are they out here when there's so many other things you could be doing? Well, if you just drove the speed limit, you could just smile and wave. And some of you, when I say God's watching, you just think he's just like this abusive parent that I had. He's watching to catch me in something bad so he can punish me. But I want to suggest to you that the entire story of this man's life that we're going to look at today, and it's a very short story, is a story of a person who needed to be constantly reminded that God was with him so he'd live differently. And it's not just a matter of he'd live differently by sinning less, though that was part of it. When you realize God's with you, here's some benefits that come with it. Number one, you do treat temptation a whole lot differently. I know I wasn't tempted. Even if I was tempted to steal a cookie, I was able to overcome that temptation when mom and dad were there watching. When you realize God's with you and you feel a temptation coming, when you realize and you drink into that, it can help you make the right choice with respect to that temptation. Well, I wish God would just take the temptation away. No, as long as you have a flesh, you're going to have that temptation. The temptation in and of itself is not the issue. It's how we respond to it. And when I'm confident that God really is with me, well, I know he's with me all the time. Yeah, you might know, but you don't believe. Belief means it's sunk in and you live as though it's a fact. You might have grabbed a fact that hasn't changed the way you live one bit. When you realize God's with us, it's supposed, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wise choices. But it's also supposed to translate in some other ways. When you know God is with you, fears dissolve. I don't need to be afraid when he's around. He controls everything. What do I need to be afraid of? He controls everything. He's big. He's powerful. I can stand up tall because God is here. Jesus, my big brother is here. I can walk forward. I can be brave. I can be bold. I can have courage. It instills confidence when you know God's with you. You can face adversity and challenges without cowering away from it. You can tunnel through tough things when you know God's with you. But when you forget, all bets are off. We take matters into our own hands. God's motivation in watching over us is not to pull us over and give us a ticket. God is always with us all the time, everywhere, to protect us and to bless us. That's what he's looking for. He's listening in on the conversation, saying, oh, that's my daughter. That's her. That's my daughter. That's my son. Look at how he's handling himself right now. Look at this. Look at the kindness. Look at the restraint. Look at the hard work. Look at the peace. Look at the rest. Look at the way he's talking to his spouse right now. Look at the way she is caring for her son. Look at how patient she's being in this challenge at work. You see, grabbing on to the reality of a God who's always with us will absolutely, undeniably change your life. And I think it's worth looking at because we're looking at a little story today. Genesis chapter 26. We won't read the whole chapter. It's 34 verses long, but it's the story of a man named Isaac. Have you heard of Isaac? God is the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. But if I ask you to give me a bunch of facts about him, trust me, I bet you know less about him than all the other ones. Because the Bible doesn't give us a whole lot on Isaac. In fact, in my Bible, he's only really, his story's condensed to 3 chapters of Genesis, but he's only really active making decisions in like 1.5 of those chapters. And I have this open for a reason to this page right here. I can take an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. I can fold it this way. And in my Bible, I can cover everything that's written about Isaac's life. This much. How'd you like your whole life to be summarized on that? You might not be around, but if they write an obituary that they hand out at your funeral, it's probably going to fit on a sheet of paper like this. A third of it's going to be about your family, when you were born, when you died, who you're related to. And if your family's industrious, there might be a few statements about what you did for work, where you lived. But think about it. If my whole life is condensed down to this, what do I want to be on that piece of paper? Am I doing anything today that's going to land there? This is about all we know about Isaac, about that much. And you're like, Pastor, and you're going to talk for another? No, listen. Just relax. We don't know a whole lot about Isaac, but that doesn't mean he's unimportant. In fact, if you look at all the other famous people in Genesis, all of them have more chapters written about them. Adam has more than Isaac. Noah has more chapters than Isaac. Abraham has a lot more. He's got like 13 chapters. Jacob has a lot more. Joseph has chapters 37 through 50. And Isaac has like a chapter and a few verses on either side. And he was born over here and had a couple kids. Then the chapter where he acts in the other one, and then he eventually got hoodwinked by one of his kids. And he played favorites. If there's a word that kept coming up in all the different books I read from old dead theologians about Isaac, it was ordinary. I kept saying, he was just ordinary. And I don't mean that dismissively. When it comes to ordinary, I'm about as ordinary as they get. There is absolutely nothing remarkable, historic about me. And I don't say that negatively. I'm ordinary. I'm just thankful God loves using ordinary people. I don't have to be above ordinary for God to use me. I can even be below ordinary. And trust me, there are many, I have a lot of my old report cards. Lots of teachers wrote that. Phil is, well, unique. He is special. I don't think they meant those as compliments. He is an interesting character. Thanks, Mrs. Bonnets. But Isaac, as Skip Heitzig says, Isaac was the ordinary son of a great father and the ordinary father of a great son. And if you want to summarize his story in Genesis 26, I'll give you 4 words. Like father, like son. You're going to feel like this chapter is deja vu. Because his daddy Abraham, a lot of the episodes of Abraham's life are lived out and repeated in Genesis 26. God called Abraham, God called Isaac. God made a promise with Abraham, he makes the same promise to Isaac. Abraham failed spectacularly in one point by passing off his wife as his sister, and Isaac does the exact same thing in this chapter. Abraham makes a covenant with a guy named Abimelech. Isaac makes a covenant with a man named Abimelech. When God called Abraham to go to a certain land and there was famine, Abraham moved. In the beginning of this chapter, Isaac, who was living in the same town as Abraham, famine hits, and he starts to move. It's like deja vu all over again, like father, like son. So if you got one chapter of your life, that would not be the way I want my chapter to go. Phil was born to parents, had some siblings, got married, had some kids, and then he failed spectacularly and ultimately died. That's a fun funeral to go to. That's not the way I want my story to go. And yet, in a way, Phil failed spectacularly. And ultimately, he died. But there's some more in the story that in spite of my failures, Jesus saved me. And in spite of my weaknesses, in spite of my all the areas of my life where I fall short, in spite of my ordinariness. Is that a word? Thank you, and sure. That's the right answer right there is sure. Thank you. In spite of my ordinariness, and maybe even because of it, God's used me to do things that I couldn't do if I took it in my own hands so that other people can look at it and be like, there is absolutely no way That human being should be living with that kind of favor on his life. There must be a God somewhere, because that person left to their own devices couldn't live that way. That's my story. May my story be an arrow of ordinariness that points to a great God. That's your story. That's Isaac's story. Isaac's story is about a man who God had to come to and speak out loud and say, I'm always with you. I'll be with you in the future. I'm with you in the present. I've been with you in your past. Therefore, have courage. Trust me. Have faith. Don't be anxious. Don't worry. Use your life to point glory to me. And Isaac says, okay. And then the next day he forgets God's with him. And he fails. God has to come and remind him again. And he gets it a little bit better. And then he's still a little nervous. And God has to come and remind him again. And he says, okay, I'll grow in this area. This story is all about that an ever-increasing awareness of the omnipresence of God changes your life. It is life-altering. If you can believe in the core of your being that God is always with you, that if you're in Jesus, he's in you, you will live differently because you won't have as much fear. You won't have as much anxiety. You won't have as much worry. You will be more confident. You'll have deeper faith. You'll overcome temptation if you believe Jesus is really with you all the time to protect you and bless you. That's Isaac's story, and it's my story. And it's probably your story. Let's look at it real briefly this morning. I'm not going to read the whole chapter, but I will read the first six verses of Genesis 26. A severe famine now struck the land, and the compiler of Genesis wants us to know, this is deja vu because of the next phrase, just like as had happened before in Abraham's time. So the compiler of this chapter wants the reader to understand this is a repeat. This is repetition. This is Genesis 12 all over again. There is a famine. It struck the land. It happened in Abraham's time. So Isaac did what? Hello? Isaac moved. Where did God say? Stay there. Stay in the land. I'll be with you. Isaac says, awesome. It's nice here. Weather's good. Easy farming. Then it gets hard and challenging, and it looks like it's drying up. And so what does he do? Moves, just like many of us do. When marriage gets hard, well, if God was really in this wouldn't be so hard. I'm going to move. This job that I know God gave me 6 months ago, well, now it's hard. It's tense. I'm not fulfilled and satisfied. This must not be God. I'm going to move. Because if it was God, then it would always be good. And it would always be fulfilling. I would get raises every month. They would accidentally overpay me all the time, even when I don't work. I would get double for my trouble. Marriage would just always be romance and writing songs and sonnets and staring lovingly into each other's eyes and just romance for year after year after year without any effort at all. We won't get old. We won't age. Our body won't go south. Everything will be terrific. That's how I know God's in it. But if it's difficult, I'll move. My taxes look way too high, if I'm honest. I need to recalculate. It's too hard. Giving, too hard. I'm going to move. This ministry I'm serving in, just not lighting my fire this week. The kids were not attentive. They did not want to sit in circles quietly and listen without interrupting me. I think I need to move to another ministry that's just more fulfilling. So let's not be too hard on Isaac. God said, I'm with you, go live here. And he lived there as long as it, in his mind, looked like God was there. But when it looked difficult, he said, God must not be in it. Friend, I got to tell you, God does not promise a life without difficulty. In fact, he promises you difficulty. Adjust your expectations accordingly. Because if you follow Jesus, there's going to be famine. And if you don't follow Jesus, there's going to be famine. I want to follow Jesus into the famine because he's Lord of the famine and he's Lord of the harvest. So Isaac moved to Gerar, where Abimelech, king of the Philistines, lived. Reading on. The Lord appeared to Isaac and said, do not go down to Egypt, but do as I tell you. Why do you think God had to say, don't go down to Egypt? He was going down to Egypt just like his dad did. When there was famine in the promised land, Abraham said, if I stay here, surely God is not powerful enough to keep me alive in a difficult situation. I need to take matters in my own hand by leaving the place God told me to go to for literally more green pastures. Because in Egypt, they had a water source. Farming was easier. They could make money easier. They could survive easier. The problem was God didn't tell them to go there. That was going back, not going forward. He said, stay in the land I promised you, and I'll take care of you. And he said, well, as soon as, and what Isaac didn't realize was like what Abraham thought. They put a condition on it that God didn't say. God, I will stay here in this land as long as it looks like, in my opinion, you're blessing me. But if it looks hard or challenging, or if I can't figure out how you're going to do it, I'm out. I'm going to go back to the way things used to be. But God says, don't do it. Do as I tell you. Keep in mind, God is speaking to him out loud in a voice he can hear. This is powerful. Live here as a foreigner in this land, and I will be with you. He's talking about, I'll be with you in the future. If you stay here today, I'll be with you tomorrow, the next week, the next month. Why? So I can bless you. I hereby confirm that I will give you all these lands to you and your descendants. Well, this is not new. Didn't God already say this to somebody? Said it to his daddy. Just as I solemnly promised Abraham your father, next verse, I will cause your descendants to become as numerous as the stars of the sky. Well, if he's going to do that, Isaac's got to live, not die in the famine. I will give them all these lands, and through your descendants, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. This is not new. He had already said this to Abraham, but now he's saying it to Isaac. Stay here, and I'll be with you in the future. I will do this because, Isaac, you're awesome. Isaac, you're a spiritual giant. That's not what he says. This is crazy. You got to catch this. Here's God's basis for this blessing to Isaac. Because I don't know, I'm reading this, I'm like, how does this ordinary dude qualify for this blessing? Wasn't there anybody more qualified? God says, listen, you know why I'm going to do all this? It's because your dad listened to me. Your dad obeyed all my requirements, commands, decrees, and instructions. Well, wait a minute. Time out. Did Abraham obey everything perfectly? No. But do you remember, we tread this ground before. The Bible says Abraham believed God, and God credited him righteousness. The righteousness that God's talking about here, it's not a righteousness that was based on Abraham's performance. It was a righteousness God gave Abraham. Abraham, your performance isn't good enough, but I'm going to credit you righteousness that you didn't earn because you believed me. Now watch this. And Isaac, not because of your performance, but because of a promise I made to your dad, I'm going to bless you because he was righteous. And you're like, how is that fair? Isaac is ordinary. Isaac's not an example of righteousness. Isaac was nowhere near the man his dad was, and yet God's going to bless him simply because he's related to Abraham? Yes, and God blesses you and me not because we're that good, but we're related to Jesus. Nothing good in my life is because I earned it. It's because God says to me, I'm going to be faithful to you because you're in my family. You're brother to Jesus. You opted in to the family. And when you come into my family, I treat you like family. I treat you like my son. I treat you like my daughter because you're family. So Jesus is faithful and will be with us not because we earn it, not because we deserve it, not because we're spectacular, but because of his promise to Jesus, and we're family now. You see, Abraham's just an arrow that points to a better Abraham in Jesus. So all this stuff is going on. Here's the big idea. So he stayed in Gerar. Good for him. Jesus shows up, or God shows up, talks out loud, says, don't go, I'll be with you. Isaac says, okay, big voice, I'll stay. And we say, good job, Isaac. And I say, not so fast. But here's the big idea. I want you to internalize this. God's with every believer. Always. Everywhere. To bless you. To protect you. This is truth, and it's life-altering. You will live differently today if you believe Jesus is always with you. You'll overcome temptation. You won't be as afraid. You won't be as insecure. You won't be racked with worry if you believe Jesus is with you, if you really believe it. Haven't you had experiences where Jesus met you in your car? You're just walking down the sidewalk and you felt Jesus with you? It changes that moment. It changes your grocery shopping. You know Jesus is with you. He's with you always, not just in isolated moments. He's always with us. We're not always aware of it. And if you live with an uninterrupted awareness of Jesus' presence with you, it will change the fabric of every second of every minute of every day for you in tangible ways that will reduce stress, reduce anxiety, elevate confidence, elevate courage, and keep you on the path of making wise decisions. Every time we break down in those areas, it's a result, at least in part, of a lack of awareness of God being with us. That's Isaac's whole story. When he forgot God was with him, he lived bad. He lived poorly. He failed. When he remembered God was with him, it kept him on the right track. He had confidence, courage, obedience. Let's look at it a little more closely. The question I'm threading through this morning's message is this: how differently would I live if I truly believed God was with me always? Pastor, how do I reduce stress? That's a long answer. I'll give you one thing you can do today. Have a better understanding of God being with you always. Right now, in the present. How do I overcome the sin I keep struggling with over and over and over again? There's a lot more conversation that goes on with it, but here's a place you can start. Imagine Jesus being with you in your struggle. It's hard to move forward and act on some of those sins when Jesus is right there with you and you're aware of it. It gives you the tenacity, the courage, the wisdom, the fear of God to act right, to overcome that thing. What would you do? What risks, what faith steps would you take if you just knew Jesus was with you in it? This was Isaac's lessons. He had to learn that God was with him in the future. God would be with him in the present. God was already with him in the past. First thing God says is, if you stay here, I'll be with you in the future. Stay here, don't leave, and I'll be with you in this famine. Verse 3, God says, live here as a foreigner, and I will be with you. This took a huge step of faith for Isaac, because he looked around and he's like, God, there are no sales coming in. There's no income. Isaac was a farmer. That was both his way of survival and his way of making ends meet economically. And in a famine, there's no water, and you need water for crops to grow. And Isaac's looking around, and in the natural, if he took matters into his own hands, it just looked like sure catastrophe. It looked like sure death. But God shows up and reminds him he'll be with him in the future. And for the moment, Isaac stays put. He says, okay, I'll stay here. I'm a man of faith. And the very next verse, we see that Isaac stumbled. He deceived. He compromised. He got scared and insecure and wimpy. Forgot that God was with him. Because the next verse tells us another part of the story. His wife was really good looking. And Isaac recognized all the Philistines were making eyes at his wife. And what he feels in that moment is not a desire to protect his wife. He feels a desire to protect himself. Because he recognizes these people are not God-fearing people. They wouldn't dare take her if she was married to me. They'd just simply kill me to take her. And we stick out like a sore thumb. We're outsiders. We're not Philistines. We're ethnic outsiders. And so everybody knows us. The safer route is if they think she's my sister. Because if she's my sister, and they would have to at least go through me first. That's their rule to get to her. They'd have to ask my permission. I'd at least have a heads up. Same exact train of thought as his dad when his dad pulled the same stunt. What Isaac's basically saying is this: I'm afraid I'm going to die, so I need to make my wife vulnerable so I feel safe. That's not a good husband. I'm afraid God won't protect us if I tell the truth, so I better take matters into my own hands. How many times have you been in the same situation where you said, if I tell the truth, it's going to go poorly for me, but if I withhold the truth or change the truth or slight the truth or recalculate the numbers or just don't bring it up, if I sweep it under the rug, that looks like a better pathway forward. But that's not the character of our God. And so Isaac tells everybody she's his sister so that he doesn't feel vulnerable. Well, Abimelech's looking outside his window one day, and the Bible tells us that he sees Isaac and Rebekah out in the field. And the King James used some interesting language that I won't go deep into this morning, but I'll summarize it. He notices Isaac and his body language and his physical touch patterns with his sister are not the way that brothers and sisters act. He sees them outside flirting and whatever they're doing, and he says, he pulled one over on us. That's not his sister, that's his wife. And immediately Abimelech is furious and he calls Isaac in and he confronts him and he says, why did you lie to us about your wife? She's not your sister, she's your wife. Why would you do such a thing? And Isaac answers honestly and says, because I was afraid you'd kill me if you thought we were married. And now Abimelech steps up. Now he's an unbeliever. He's a Philistine. Here's what he said. Do you realize, Isaac, that if one of my men would have slept your wife, how much danger we'd be in, Bible's words, because of this great sin? Abimelech's not even a follower of God, but there's boundaries, and one of them is you don't sleep with another man's wife. He says, you realize what would happen to my whole nation? Because he had seen this number before, too. You realize what would happen to us? You're setting all of us up for this. Here you have an unbeliever calling out the sin of a believer and doing it correctly. What a shame. We do God no favors when the unbelievers in our lives who are watching how we live because they know we're believers, they see us and they see us accurately and they see us sinning. Has that ever stung you? Someone says, and I thought you called yourself a Christian. And you're immediately defensive. Whoa, all Christians aren't perfect. All the other things, rather than just saying, you know what, you're right. I shouldn't be living that way. That was wrong of me to do, and I'm sorry. Someone's always watching. Sting is, right? He's always watching. Everything you do. Those creepy Santa Claus songs. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. Man, this guy's a creep. Someone's always watching. That's not to put pressure on us, but it should be a reminder to us to lean on Jesus. If he's with me, he'll help me live wisely in those moments. So Abimelech speaks up and he does something for Rebekah and for Isaac that Isaac was too weak to do. Abimelech says, I'm going to just make a law that no one can touch your wife. So Abimelech says, I'll protect your wife, where Isaac was too nervous to do so. You know why Isaac did it? I'll tell you why. He forgot the Lord was with him. God had just said, I'll be with you. I'll protect you. I'll bless you. You're going to have lots of kids. In order for that to be true, I can't just let your wife get killed off or you get killed off. We need both of you in the equation. But then Isaac says, I appreciate that word from God. Oh, but it's Monday now. And that word I got yesterday, oh, now I can't figure out how it's going to happen. I guess I need to just take matters into my own hands and tell a lie and be deceitful. And be married to my wife in secret. What in the world? How do you think Rebekah feels about all this? What a mess. Because he forgot God will be with you in the future. If you choose to say yes to him and you follow him, he'll be with you. Do you believe God's going to be with you this week, this month, this year, if God gives you this year? Do you really believe God's going to be with you in the future? Because if you believe that, then you can step into something. And when it gets difficult, you don't bounce. Now, I need to be honest with you. I need to be balanced here. Sometimes famine comes up and things dry out and things get bad, and that's one of the ways God tells you it's time to move. And then there's other times he says, not time to stay. Well, how do I know the difference? You've got to walk close to Jesus. You've got to walk close to Jesus. Be faithful. He said, don't leave, but stay. He doesn't even get mad at him for leaving. It's kind of like, I expected this. But now I'm going to show up and talk to you out loud. Stay, trust me. He says, okay, you're very loud. I can hear you clearly. I'm going to stay. And then the next day he's not hearing him clearly. It's like, maybe the only time I know God's near is if he talks out loud. And if he's not talking out loud, he's not with me. And now I have to take matters in my own hands. He forgot God was with him. And you live differently. You live with more confidence, with more courage, with more faith when you know God's with you. But the good news is that verse 6 says, Isaac stayed in Gerar. After Abimelech sets matters straight, Isaac stays. Sticks around. So Abimelech issues the proclamation. He sticks around. And so Isaac says, all right, I'm going to plant some crops. I'm going to plant some. In famine. He's like, well, I'll just plant. And he plants. Here's what the Bible says. His plants grew. No one else's did. Isaac's did, and he got a 100-fold return on his harvest. 100-fold. His yield was 100 times what he planted. Now, that was not historically impossible in rainy seasons, but it was unheard of in famine. And I want you to know, all the neighbors notice. You know what they're thinking? That joker's not even a good farmer. He's out there planting on the rocks and the sand. He's not watering. He has no irrigation system. And it's growing and growing and growing, and ours isn't. And you know what? They're getting jealous because people either want to be on your level or they want to drag you down to theirs. That's the way we stay even. And so they resort to vandalism, all the Philistine neighbors. They start polluting his water supply, filling up his wells, fighting over things. And so Isaac, he's not a fighter. Now his daddy would have been like, what are you doing messing with my stuff? Isaac's like, oh, you want this land? Okay, you want it? Okay, we'll just move. It's a little tense here. We don't want conflict. I'll just move. So he moves a little farther out to the outskirts of Gerar. Same thing. Plants, successful, but he's still insecure. He's still nervous. I need to just take a moment and speak to something. Have you ever heard the term generational curse? A generational curse? If you haven't, I don't really want to educate you on what it is, but there is a teaching that teaches about a type of sin being a generational curse. And it kind of goes like this. If you as a parent struggle with a specific deep sin that's a habit, alcoholism, physical violence, abusiveness, coarse language, pick one. It is automatically passed on to your children, and now they're going to struggle with it. And they're going to sin above and beyond their own control, and their kids will struggle in the same thing, and their kids' kids, and the cycle will keep going, and your whole family tree is cursed by this sin, unless or until some Christian comes along and prays some specific prayer that breaks the curse. And then automatically, no one else in your family tree will struggle with it. There's a couple problems with this. Number one, each of us has a choice, and we're responsible for our own sins. Number two, Jesus' death on the cross was sufficient to break every chain. It's not like Jesus died for some sins to be broken, but generationally, you're stuck with those until someone else does something that adds on to what Jesus did. No, if there is a sin that seems to run in your family tree, let me speak practically. You grow up in a culture of your home. And if your parents or your grandparents or somebody else, if they struggled in a sin that was very obvious, became part of the culture of your home, you absolutely will have a propensity for it. You absolutely will have a proclivity for it. It might even seem normal for you. I'm not denying that it is easy for you to pick those habits up, but what I'm telling you is you don't need some separate person to come along and break a curse. You need the power of Jesus who already died to break the curse. That's it. So yes, the way that I live around my boys and the weaknesses in my life and the sin and the brokenness in my own life is absolutely somehow woven in the culture of our home that's going to make them more susceptible to some things than others. I'm not denying that there is some genetic connections to certain things. What I am telling you, though, is that you don't have to wait for someone else to come along and help you in that category of sin. You can be free in the name of Jesus. And even if someone prays over you, you still got to go out and walk through that victory in the name of Jesus. One death on one cross broke the curse of all sins. Forever, okay? So let that be a word of freedom to you today. He needed to know that God would be with him. He needed to know that God was going to be with him in the future. Let me move forward quickly. I need to advance this so we can close it at a reasonable time. He also needed to be reminded that God was with him in the present. Here's how the story went. There was a whole lot of this chapter we're going to leave out, and it was this controversy over who owned different water sources. Isaac was having incredible success as a farmer, not because he was a great farmer, because there was no farming skill that caused him to get a hundredfold return. It was only the favor of God and God saying, even though in this environment it looks like death, don't write me off. I can bring life even where it looks empty. I can give you favor even where it looks like famine. I will be with you. And everybody else took notice and started vandalizing the wells. And so Isaac said, okay, I'll just move over here. And you're like, oh, what a wimpy guy. You know what he did when he went over there? The crops worked again. They grew again. In fact, where he moved to, he's like, oh, my dad left a bunch of wells around here. They're all closed up. Let me open them back up again. I'll just put their new names back on. He gets successful. Well, now the Philistine neighbors out there start looking in and say, uh-huh. We're going to take those wells. We need those wells. They say, these aren't yours. These are ours. And Isaac's employees are like, no, they're ours. Look whose name's on them. And now there's this fight between the Philistines and Isaac's herdsmen over the ownership of these wells. And Isaac, well, okay, if you want the wells, let's not fight over this. We'll move on again. Can I just name them? Can I just put little name tags on them? Can we do? And he He moves on again and he goes to Beersheba, sets up camp again. He's still in the promised land. God shows up a second time in the chapter, and here's what he says, verse 23. Isaac moved to Beersheba, where the Lord appeared to him on the night of his arrival. As soon as he shows up in Beersheba and sets up camp, God shows up again. He says, I'm the God of your father Abraham. Do not be afraid. Now, why does he say that? He's afraid. Man, my life is so tough. I just throw seeds on the ground and they come up a hundredfold. And then the neighbors come by and want to take my wells and I have to move. And then I throw seeds down again and it grows. And I'm afraid. And God's like, stop. I'm with you. He doesn't say, stop, here's what I'm going to do. He says, stop, I'm with you right now. I'm showing up. It's nighttime, and I'm here, and I'm God, and I'm big. And let me remind you, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to bless you not because you're a mighty man of faith. I'm going to bless you in spite of all your insecurities because you know what? You're family to someone I made a covenant with. I'll multiply your descendants. They'll become a great nation. I'll do this because of my promise to Abraham, my servant. Why is God good, so good to me? Because of a promise to Jesus. Because he's good to Jesus, and I'm in him, and he's in me. And because of Jesus, we're family. And so I'm grafted in, I'm adopted in, I'm co-heir. Not because I earned it, but because of Jesus. God's always been like this. And he's still like this. I'm going to do this. He's saying, I'm with you right now. Right now I'm with you. How would you live differently if you can just, even in the present, if the future's too hard for you to think about, if you could just raise your awareness to God being with you right now. Doesn't that dissolve fear? Doesn't that bring things down a little bit? Doesn't that raise your confidence and raise your faith? Doesn't that help the way you process through the ups and downs and the tensions and the decisions of your day? Doesn't it put everything in the right priority? He comes to Isaac and says, I'm with you right now. Therefore, don't fear. When a good dad is with you, when a good grown-up was with you, fear goes down. You know, my 8-year-old, every now and again, we'll be walking in a city and we'll be crossing the street. And he's not like this all the time, but sometimes there's a lot of traffic and big loud cars, he'll reach up and take my hand. Now, why does he do that? Because he's convinced that grown-up will stop a bus if it comes this way and I'll be able to walk across it. He overestimates. It's because I feel afraid, but if I can grab onto the hand of someone next to me and squeeze onto it, someone who I think is bigger and more powerful than me, I'm going to feel less afraid. You can grab onto that Jesus whenever you're afraid. And when you grab on him, if you know he's more powerful, the cars can keep coming and the buses can keep driving, but you're just like, I know he's got this and I don't have to be afraid. This is what God is saying to Isaac. You don't need to keep moving. You don't have to worry about the vandals. Goodness, if you can trust me to give you crops in the famine, can you not trust I'm going to give you water even with vandals? I'm with you right now. Okay, let me hurry to close. And then ultimately, the story, you finally get the payoff. I love this part of the story because finally Isaac, he stays put. And the cool part of that whole is verse 25, chapter 26, verse 25. The cool part is it says, that was the wrong chapter. I'm not going to read that verse because that totally has nothing to do with it. He says, I'll do this because of my promise to Abraham. And it says, then Isaac built an altar there and worshiped the Lord. Only verse we really get that takes a peek inside of the private spiritual life of Isaac. But he built an altar there because he's like, this was a powerful moment. I don't want to forget it. And he worshiped God there. He really, really grew in his faith in this moment. He says, you know what? I finally get it. God really is with me. And so he stays there. He stays right there. And then the last story in this whole chapter is Isaac is reminded that God not only will be with him in the future and the present, but people who have been watching him stop by and say, you know what? God's been with you this whole way through. Abimelech tracks him down. Remember Abimelech? He sent him away earlier. He said, listen, you got to move out of Gerar. Way back earlier on, he says, listen, there's vandals around. I'm not going to be able to protect you from them. You're becoming way too powerful. You're weirding us out. We don't want to mess with you. Just move to the suburbs. So he moves to the suburbs and then the burbs and then the rural area. He's way out there. And God's still blessing him. So Abimelech comes out to Isaac this time, and he brings with him his cabinet and his advisors. And as he's approaching, Isaac, brave man of God, says, why are you coming here? I thought you hated me. Very insecure still. But Abimelech says to him, and I'll read it to you. we can plainly see that the Lord is with you. This is an unbeliever. Sometimes other people see more clearly than you do that God's with you. And you need to let them remind you. God, he said, we can see clearly God is with you. Now here's what's wild. We know Isaac, right? He's not an intimidating dude. He is not a general. He's not a buckler of swash. He is not skilled at anything military. No one's nervous about him. He's kind of the guy that anytime there's conflict, he moves away. He's the last guy I would be afraid of picking a fight with me. Here's what the king says. We want to enter into a sworn treaty with you. Let's make a covenant. Why? Having nothing to do with Isaac, it says the Lord's with you. We might mess with you, but not your God. And if your God's with you, we don't want any trouble. Swear that you won't harm us. And Isaac's probably thinking, oh, okay. Swear you won't harm us, just as we've never troubled you. We've always treated you well, and we sent you away from us in peace. And now, look at how the Lord has blessed you. You know, you don't always see Jesus through the windshield. There's times in life, and I'm there too, where I'm like, Jesus, I'm looking at work, I'm looking at finances, I'm looking at parenting, I'm looking at whatever. And right now, it's really hard to see your blessing in my life. But man, when I look in the rearview mirror, I see you've been with me the whole way through. And sometimes you don't see till later. I was talking with one of the dads in between service, and he was just mentioning to me, he said, hey, did I tell you this story about what went on with, I was just asking, following up on a situation with one of his boys who had been sick this last week. He's like, and I love the way that he phrased it. He said, did I tell you the story of how this went down? I think it was actually a God thing. What he's saying is, in the moment, I didn't see God's hand in it. But now, sitting on this side of it, I look back and say, even though I wasn't totally following all the details, God was with me through the whole thing. He was just saying the flu was passing through his family. And one person got the flu and went to patient first. And when they went there, the doctor, the PA there said, listen, probably everybody in your family is going to get this. And rather than having to come here and going through the whole song and dance, we're going to prescribe this for you this time. But next time, the next person in your family, use telehealth. You can do it from home. Just tell them, show them this document, and they'll give you the prescription. Well, person number two started showing symptoms. They called telehealth. Boom, went right through, got what they needed. Person number three, boom, went right through. Then person number four, similar symptoms, called telehealth, and they said, okay, yeah, we'll get right back to you. So dad goes back to his very important meeting, kind of puts it out of his mind. Then they get a call back. The doctor says, I'm not so sure in person number four, this is the flu. And of course you're thinking, of course it's the flu. I've got all these, I don't have time for an emergency today. Some of you have time for an emergency. I don't. I wish I could schedule them in. But she's like, oh my goodness. And they get back on the phone and the doctor says, no, I really think you ought to take them somewhere else to get checked out. And any parent who's been in that situation is kind of like, it's just a flu. It's just a tummy ache. We see this all the time. I don't have time today. If I leave, 13 other people's lives are going to be impacted because of meetings, but okay. And so you kind of do it begrudgingly, and you kind of, well, it turns out this person needed to have emergency surgery. But because the doctor followed the whole steps of the protocol, they caught it, and the dad says, now that I look back on it, God was with us. Because I wouldn't have caught it in the natural. I just thought everybody in our family's getting sick the same way. They all had the same symptoms. He must be the same thing. We would have just treated him for a tummy ache when really it was something far more serious. I wasn't even tuned in. I wasn't even really happy about it at the moment. I wasn't thankful in that moment. I'm thinking this doctor is just overreacting. But I look back now. Look how faithful God was. Even when I didn't see it, now I look back and say, man, I'm glad it happened just that way or I would have missed it. Have you ever looked in the rearview mirror and said, I'm so thankful God was with me? Doesn't that give you, when you know, I was talking with someone in between services who's so nervous about choosing a college, submitted to 10 universities, got accepted to 4, and it's this feeling like if I pick the wrong one, my life is good. I'm going to mess up my whole life. And look, God's going to be with you. He's with you. We follow him, and I love the song, surely your goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. You don't have to walk through this like a tightrope. God will be with you. You'll look back over your shoulder and say, man, God was with me in this and he was with me in that. He's with you in spite of whether you're always like, oh, is it this door or that door? If it's not a choice between sin and not sin, that's a choice of obedience. If it's a choice of wisdom, like, listen, how wrong, you do the best you can with what you got, and God is really good. He's really good at guiding us along and growing us and being patient. And I love this part of the story. Isaac gets to hear from somebody else, the king, He says, obviously, we plainly see that the Lord is with you. And I can hear Isaac, even though it's not written there, I can hear him say, you know, if he were real honest and say, you know, King Abimelech, I see that now too. He's been with me. And I haven't always trusted him perfectly. And I'm a person of insecurities. I don't have a big personality like my dad. I'm not skilled in military things. I'm just a simple, ordinary farmer that needs a lot of reassurance in life. But my dad was a righteous man, and I'm my dad's son, and my God takes care of family. And simply because I'm family, God's blessing me, not because I deserve it, not because I'm some great leader, not because I believe him perfectly. He's with me. And now I can, they have this big celebration, and then of course the chapter takes a sharp left turn, and the next one, it's not, it's a little more down here. But we'll talk about that next week. But here's my concluding thought. It's a quote directly from my favorite book that I'm reading on Genesis, R. Kent Hughes. A deepening awareness of God's always and everywhere presence alters our lives in at least five ways. It crushes the temptation to compromise. That's what I told you earlier. It's hard to sin when you realize Jesus is with you, or at least say it's harder. We're trying to block Jesus out when we sin, but when we recognize he's with us, it helps us to make wise decisions. Secondly, it puts our fears to flight. We can grab onto that hand, and the buses don't even have to stop. We just know someone's more powerful than the bus is with us, right? It instills confidence and steel. It helps us to be willing to test our faith and take God-inspired faith steps. It protects us and our loved ones, and it upholds the name of God. I just want you to be more aware of God's omnipresence, because I really believe it will absolutely change the way you live. And I am so thankful that God's promises to us are true and steadfast, not because of our own resume or because we've earned that or we deserve it, but because he has a relationship that is unbroken, a perfect relationship. The righteousness of Jesus gives us access to God's family, and God imputes and imparts that righteousness to us, so that the same blessings that he gives to his own son, he gives to us because we're family. Amen? Worship team, will you come? Let me pray over you. Most importantly, as we bow our heads and close our eyes, I want to give you an opportunity to know that you're saved. And if I were unsaved, I wouldn't want to leave this place until I knew that I was saved. Because if you're not saved, the reality is that God is around you, but God's not living within you through his Holy Spirit. That only happens the moment that we're saved. And the moment that we're saved, it always happens that God's Spirit comes and lives inside of you. And I want to make that available to you today. You just have to believe that you need to be saved. You can't get into heaven on your own resume because we've sinned. You've sinned, I've sinned, we've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. What sin deserves is death, but God offers us a gift. You can either get the wage, what you deserve for your sin, which is death, separation from God forever in hell. Or you can receive the gift. A gift is not something you earn. A gift is something that the giver gets to decide to give out to whoever and however they want. And the gift God offers is eternal life through Jesus. And if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is the Lord because you believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you'll be saved. That's it. Jesus has done all the work. You just have to believe and confess. If you're ready to do that this morning, can I lead you in a simple prayer? Dear Jesus, I need to be saved. I've sinned. I've been living without you. Please forgive me for all the sins that I've done. I receive your free gift of forgiveness. Wash my sins away and make me new. I want your Holy Spirit to come and live inside of me, so you can be with me always. And you can change me in the way that I think and feel, so that I can become like Jesus. You're the Lord, and I'm going to stop living like I'm the Lord. Today begins my surrender to your leadership in my life. And I've never been more happy to declare my dependence. In your precious name I pray. Amen.
We hope you enjoyed the Echo Community Church podcast. If you prayed that prayer at the end of the message and began following Jesus Christ today, we'd love to celebrate with you and and give you some simple next steps to take as you begin your new life with Him. Just email us at info@echochurchmd.com to let us know. If you'd like more information about Echo Community Church, you can check out our Facebook page or our website, echochurchonline.com. Thanks so much for listening.